Every year, thousands of people go to their very first concert. Our boosted signal at large events means they can always call a taxi to get home.
Mom? Yeah. It was grand. Do you think you could pick me up?
Every connection counts, which is why Ireland can count on our network. Vodafone. Together we can.
Subject to coverage availability. Limitations and terms apply. See vodafone.ie/terms.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we're going to look at the key cybercrime trends here in Ireland. And what do you need to do to stay safe? Derek Riley of Nevo.ie will be in to preview this year's big, glorious live show in the RDS. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. We'll also take a closer look at that fine issued by the Data Protection Commission against LinkedIn. And we'll talk through my experience with Microsoft Copilot. We're going to start this week, though, with cybersecurity. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. For the last few years, I have brought you insights from An Garda Síochána, from the National Cybersecurity Centre. And today we're going to talk about, I suppose, how real the threat is, what your business could and should be doing, and what you as an individual could and should be doing. I'm delighted to say that Jason Guy of EY is with me now. Jason, it's great to have you on the show. As I said there a second ago, it is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and I know that different bodies, be that An Garda Síochána or the National Cybersecurity Centre, are doing quite a bit on social media to try and raise people's awareness of cyber threats. I think for a lot of people, the ransomware attack on the HSE in 2021 really put cyber and the severity of some of the attacks on the radar. When you look at Ireland in comparison to some of the other markets that I'm sure you're familiar with, would you say that we are cyber aware and have a good understanding of the devastation that a ransomware attack or a cyber attack could cause?
Yeah, Jeff, I think we're much more aware than we would have been pre that attack. In the past, cyber would have perhaps been seen by many people as something that happened somewhere else. You know, it was something in movies, maybe it happened in the US or big countries, but why would it happen here? You know, what would be the reason for somebody to come after Ireland? But the, you know, the attack on HSE woke people up to the impact that it could have on their lives, and woke up organizations to the fact that it isn't just big business or financial services in another country that cyber attackers go after, that we are at risk and that actions need to be taken. So absolutely, I think there's a lot has changed in the last few years, and people have become much more aware.
We see varying levels of cyber threats, and some people will dismiss those annoying scam text messages that come in as just an annoyance, but that is absolutely a threat. There has been quite a few awareness campaigns. At a consumer level, do you think people are savvy enough? Is that message landing that you don't click on anything ever unless you're 100% certain that it is legitimate?
Not really. People get caught. This is big business. We think of, perhaps people think of, movies that they've seen and the cyber criminals are people in basements wearing hoodies and that. This is really big business. There's, organizations set up that sole purpose is to carry out cybercrime. It's a $9 trillion business this year. And expected to rise to $15 trillion by the end of the decade. So it really is something that people are out there trying to find ways to get us. And the simple, text messages, or scam websites that people are being caught because, they may be expecting something. So they click on the link. They may just not think about it and say, I wonder what that is, and they go through and they give away their details, and perhaps they lose some money on that particular action, but maybe they've given away a little bit more detail that will be used to attack them in some other way. So there is an awareness, a heightened level of awareness, but people are still caught because they are much more sophisticated attacks than they used to be. You know, we don't really see the, you know, the Nigerian prince has a million euro that they want to give you anymore. We see, you know, realistic attacks coming through, messages that people do expect, and they get caught up by them. And it is, as I said, it's really big business.
It is, and I think you're so right. People, the reason why these scams continue to work is because they play on one element that you can't protect against, which is the humanity of humans. And people are under pressure. They're, as you said, expecting things. And that is something that will probably ramp up as Black Friday, Christmas sales and all the rest approaches. So just do be savvy on that front. When it comes to businesses, I remember even 2 years ago speaking to different business executives who were saying that depending on where they are in the company, they're still struggling to get the budget to enhance their cybersecurity protections, be that training for staff or infrastructure. Where are we on that front? You know, businesses, I suppose the devastating impact of a cyber attack on a business is not just the disruption, it can be financial impact, it can also be reputational damage. So has the shift happened in the world of business in this country now?
We find that it has, the last few years have been a marked step up in how people and how businesses react to I suppose, a cyber threat. There is very few organizations that don't now realize that they are at risk, but perhaps don't really understand how at risk they are and or where the big problem areas are. So we're finding a lot of organizations are starting to look at, so what do I need to do to protect myself? Now, there is no way of fully protecting yourself. You can take actions to reduce the risk, and you can have steps in place to respond to the risk. But ultimately, those things, no matter what you do, those things could still happen because it just takes takes one gap or one accidental kind of click on a link to expose the business. So organizations are. Spending more time and more of their budgets on improving their security, and we have seen regulations coming in now that will enforce to some extent, certain sectors to have to do something else. So every organization is looking at this as a top risk, but they don't necessarily know exactly what to do. So organizations like ourselves go in and help those organizations to understand where they need to focus their efforts. And what they may need to do, the budgets really kind of align with what the cost of the risk would be to that business. So there's no point in spending, €1 million fixing a problem that might only have, 100,000 loss if it was to occur. But if it was the opposite, then there's absolutely a point in spending 100,000 on addressing an issue that might cost €1 million. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it is that balancing of the seesaw. And I suppose that's where yourselves come in, is to try and assess not only the structures that are in place, but also potential damage that could be done. You referred to regulation and legislation there. So DORA and NIS2, can you just give us a very top line as to what they are and what structurally needs to change in organisations to be compliant?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we kind of think of it that all of these regulations are being introduced to make the digital world that we have no choice to interact with, to make it more secure and more protected, so that citizens and businesses are comfortable that the personal data that they give to these websites and they use online, and the financial data that they store online are protected, so that businesses are operating in a more secure world. There's three key areas that all of the regulations, they're very broad, but three kind of key areas that they're intended to focus on. The first is about enhancing security measures. So to ensure that there is at least a minimum level of security in place to protect the important systems and data that organizations that they hold and that they use to deliver their services. The second is around risk management and is an understanding what are the new things that are coming in, the new threats, the new risks that have arisen that need to be addressed so that you can continue to increase that security level in the face of something that perhaps wasn't known about last week or last month or last year. And the third is linked to that item that you know, no matter what you do, you could still face a problem. So it's around incident response, that you have the ability to detect quickly that something has happened, and that you can respond to that quickly enough to get your, you know, to stop the attack and to recover your systems and your processes in good time, so that you get back up online, back up and running as quickly as possible.
A big part of cyber attacks, be it those annoying text messages or be it something in work, is the putting of the hand up saying, I've been targeted and what should I do? I do think we still need to do a fair bit of work, both with our friends, family and our colleagues, to kind of reassure people that, you know, you're not an idiot for clicking on something and these things do work, but it's only when you come forward and report it and seek help that something can be done about it.
No, absolutely. And the advertising campaigns that we see are really help with that, you know, to, you know, and you kind of think of it in you've seen in other sectors, if you see it, say it, you know, it is that type of mentality. So if you click on something, you probably realize pretty quickly that you've done something. So, you know, if you've given your financial data, you'll contact your bank to say, listen, I need to stop my card, you know, because the banks are used to this. Like it is something that is quite common. In an organization, if you clicked on something or you feel that you've been caught by something, you know, telling your IT department or whoever else is in place to respond to that. Tell them quickly, allows them to respond. Now it isn't just the human factor that organizations rely on. Most organizations have some other controls in place that will, even if the human is caught, that something else will kick in. But the earlier that the person who's been caught and who's managed to kind of, you know, give some information away, the earlier they bring that to somebody's attention, the easier it will be to address any problems that might occur from it.
Yeah, and I suppose it's worth acknowledging and, you know, giving kudos to An Garda Síochána and different organisations that are there, and they have upskilled themselves to be ready, willing and able to support in the instance of, be it, you know, an individual or an organisation that has been targeted too.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, because it's become much more prevalent, much more common and much more sophisticated, all of those organizations are responding to that digital threat in the same way as they would have in the past, you know, to the physical threat. So so absolutely the you know, the National Cyber Security Center, Garda Síochána, and a lot of organizations who would perhaps be used as the lure. They've kind of also, they've also kind of given that message, and I will put it out there saying, you know, we will never contact you in this way, so please don't click on the links.
Okay, so key takeaways here. What should both, well, let's start with the individuals. What would be your key advice to individuals who will no doubt be bombarded by text messages, emails, even WhatsApps now over the coming weeks and months as the Christmas season approaches?
Yeah, so the first thing is, you know, always be suspicious of those messages that you're not expecting. You know, something comes in on your phone or in an email that you weren't expecting it, then, you know, why is it there? So always be suspicious of those. Anything but a link in it, you know, be doubly suspicious of that. You don't need to click on a link from a particular organization that's saying they've kind of, you know, your package is being delivered or please visit our website. You don't need to click on that link. You can go straight to that website, you know, that you know, go to your banking website, go to the store that you want to buy something from, on their main website, and you'll find the same information. If it is real, it's very unlikely that most organizations will send you a link to click on, because they know that you've come. So that's for individuals. Organizations need to make themselves comfortable that they have done enough. And done enough doesn't mean you've kind of closed every hole, but you've done enough to kind of, you put the basics in place, and that you are ready to respond to an attack when it happens, because it isn't a case of, it shouldn't be a case of it should be a case of when, and hopefully it never will, but for most organizations something will occur, and if you're not ready to respond to it, the impact is likely to be much greater. And being ready to respond to it means either having, you know, people internally that know what to do and maybe test it, you know, so, you know, similar to carrying out a fire drill, you carry out a simulation, and what would you do in the event of something happening? Or having somebody on, you know, somebody who is on call for you that you can contact in the event of that, you know, that unfortunate incident occurring. Mm-hmm.
That is excellent advice. Just be wary, lads. That's the upshot here. Jason, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Great. Thanks, Jess. Thanks for having me on.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
You found a dead body. It's going to be all right.
Are we sure? Ready?
After everything that happened, things are finally looking up.
Right, Ian!
Did you ever think about what we did?
I killed my husband. We are all involved in this.
We covered up a murder.
The world's better off without her. Even the Pope would say that.
Yeah, that is a snippet of the trailer of Bad Sisters, which is coming back to Apple TV Plus next month. I am very excited. If you haven't watched season one of the show that was written and stars Sharon Horgan, you need to get on it. It is weird. It is wonderful. It is set in Ireland and it'll make you laugh out loud. There are so many elements from that show that just live in my brain rent free. And I'm so excited for season two. There seems to be a lot of good stuff coming out at the moment. John Fardy is going to be with me in a few minutes' time to preview Screen Time. We might have a chat about what else is coming out this side of Christmas. If you have any recommendations, though, for me, as always, I want to hear from you. TechTalk@newstalk.com. But we must talk about electric vehicles, because listeners to this show will know that Derek Riley of Nevo.ie is with me every single month to give us news and reviews from the world of electric vehicles. But the big Nevo EV show is taking place in Dublin's RDS this November. If you are somebody who's interested in learning more about electric vehicles, you need to go along on the 10th of November. But to talk through all of the bits and pieces and what you need to know, Derek is with me now. Derek, it's hard to believe, but we mentioned this months ago as being in the pipeline, and now the weekend is here.
Exactly. We are back. And everybody thinks the last show was last year, but it was actually in February. As you know, Jess, it was your birthday weekend, but we mm-hmm. are back with the response from the people who attended and the response from people who were exhibiting at the show. Everybody wanted it again, and leading up to the new car sales period, or the 251 sales period, as they like to call it, we're back bigger and better. 6,000 square meters in February, we're now up to 10,000 square meters. We had about 45 vehicles on show in February. We're now over 80, and we're expecting between 20 and 25,000 people on the day.
Which is utterly bananas, because as we often talk about, there's still a lot of misinformation, a lot of myths, a lot of hot takes around EVs in this country. And I think what the success and the growth of this show shows is that there is an appetite for information.
Yeah, people want to understand what's going on. As much as there are people out there who share that misinformation and disinformation on social media or down the pub, et cetera, it is always going to be the people that, you know what, I'm going to find out for myself. I'm going to do my own research. I'm going to go to somewhere that's impartial. And that's what we love about Nevo.ie. It is, we give you the facts, we tell you what's what, and then you can make that decision. We don't want to force anybody into an electric vehicle that it won't suit. And it doesn't suit some people, but it does suit the majority of people. And it's all about education, information, and asking those questions in an environment that you feel comfortable asking in. Because walking into a dealership and asking about, is there a difference in the range between the summertime and the wintertime? What's the difference between slow charging and fast charging? Simple stuff to me and you, Jess, at this stage. But just somebody that's on their journey and it's day one, the show really in February proved that, you know what, people have one or two final questions before they pull the trigger on an electric vehicle and purchasing it or renting it or leasing it or whatever it may be. And that's why we're back with bigger and better and gone from one educational stage to two educational stages.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we stressed before and it's worth stressing again here now is that if you go along to the show, there's no such thing as a stupid question. I know I always say that to you that I've got a stupid question and whatever, but you always say to me, that's not a stupid question. And it's not, unless you know the answer, do you know what I mean? You always need to ask it. So it is worth going down and speaking to the experts on the floor.
Absolutely, whether it's from the manufacturers themselves, so the cars, or it could be from a charging company, or you might want to integrate solar. We have an element of business in this show as well. So in the morning, it's going to be talking about if you're thinking about changing your company cars or vans to electric, come along and listen to the panels. But there are also going to be exhibitors there and stands there that will help you understand, where do I charge them? How do I track the data, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yes, there's never a stupid question. It's just if you feel confident enough in asking it, but also we're confident in Nevo that we'll have the people on the day that will be able to answer your question.
Yeah, I was down at the Ideal Home Show in the RDS last weekend, and there were quite a few people, companies showcasing the chargers for EVs. Is that something that you'll have on site as well? People who can explain the different type of properties and how much it costs to get the chargers installed and so on?
Yeah, and what the features are. Yes, so to answer your question initially, yes, we'll have charging companies there and they have different types of home chargers, business chargers. Will it work with my solar panels? Is it a smart charger? Some people want a dumb charger. I just want a socket that'll plug in, plug out. I don't need timing. I don't need to watch whether the SSE or one of our partners for the show, SSE Electricity, and they're bringing out a new Energy Hub app. And what that'll do is allow you to choose whether you want greener energy, cheaper energy, and it'll work it all out for you. So when you wake up in the morning, it's done its thing. You didn't have to think about it overnight. So examples like that, it's not always about the car. It's the ancillary services around it, charging it at home or in the workplace. But also, we were great at, in the February, we found that there was a lot of people that were asking, how do I use the big fast chargers on the motorway? And there was people there and there was companies there, and there will be there in November. How do you tap it to start it? Do I need an app? That's a big cable, etc., etc. Feel the weight of it before you rock up to a wet and windy night in wherever around the country, and it's your first time using a public charger, you'll have the confidence of going, do you know what? I did this back in the RDS. I know exactly what I need to do. And it's all about that confidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the very, very beginning. So way back, I don't know when you started doing this slot on the show, but we started at the very, very beginning. And I think that's a good thing to do now for those contemplating going along on the 10th of November in the RDS here in Dublin. Let's run through some of the questions people need to consider if they're contemplating an EV for the first time. We'll talk about upgrading in a second. But what are the factors that people should kind of consider at this stage so that they have the questions ready to go for that weekend?
First of all, what size vehicle do you need? And that's a basic question, no matter what the powertrain is, petrol, diesel, hybrid, electric, how much stuff do you need to put in the boot on a regular basis? You're buying a vehicle for the majority of your journeys, not for those outliers where you go down to France once a year and you need to fit 12 suitcases in the boot. That's not why you should be buying a vehicle. But anyway, on the day, it's understanding the shape and size of the vehicle. And electric vehicles is interesting because it's not sometimes the traditional form factor. So you're going to get things like frunks, which is that storage space in underneath the trunk or the front boot. And so you can put storage in there as well. So there are additional places where storage you'll get in an EV that you wouldn't necessarily get in a petrol or diesel car. So how much storage do I need? How many ISO fixed points do I need? Am I planning more children? Do I need more baby chairs? Do I need a 6-seater, 7-seater, et cetera, et cetera? So the basic shape and size of the vehicle. And as I said, we're going to have over 80 of them on the day at the show. That's the first thing. The next thing is then the main one for an electric vehicle is what size battery do I need? What's the range I'm going to be doing on the majority of my day trips, my weekly trips, my monthly trips? If you do travel down to Belmullet once or twice a year, don't be buying an electric vehicle that will do that in one run just because of those two runs a year, because there are more and more public charging stations on the way and more planned. So there's over 40 hubs now in planning that we're tracking on the Irish EV Association page, so that people again can get that confidence in, if I do have to take that drive to Belmullet or Dingle or up to Donegal, I know that I can stop in those extra places around the place because there's going to be multiple hubs there. After that, then it's starting to get into the smaller stuff as to how fast does it charge? Is there a panoramic sunroof on it? What are the optional extras, et cetera, et cetera? So really the shape and size of the vehicle and how far can it go on a charge? Is it going to suit my majority of needs? They're two fairly big questions, Jess, but if you've got those knocked off, you're on the right track. What we did find at the show in February, we had people walking around with baby chairs and baby seats to see, okay, if I go for this vehicle, will it take my current baby seat or baby chair option? Which is great to see. So the practicality of it. What we didn't have in February, what we may have in November, is people walking around with the golf clubs, because golf is important to a lot of people. And will the golf clubs fit in the boot as well?
Yeah, and I suppose that's the key thing to remember here, is that you're buying something that has to fit in your life rather than the other way around. You don't want to have to tweak your life to work around the car. But am I right in saying that the range of vehicles, as in the options from manufacturers, has expanded so much over the last few years that there should be pretty much something for everybody?
Absolutely. And we're going to have everything at the show as well, from small city cars. The Dacia Spring is going to have its Irish launch. The Renault 5 is going to have its Irish launch. So these are smaller hatchbacks that are for the more urban and suburban environments, all the way up to the luxurious Polestar 3, Polestar 4, Porsche Macan. So for every budget, but also for every shape and size, and as well as the commercial vehicles that we're going to have on the day, with small to large electric vans, there is going to be, like Oprah would say, not one for everybody in the audience, but one type of for everybody in the audience. With over 80 electric vehicles, and there are only over 100 on show, we've nearly everything there on the day.
Now let's talk about those who are already in the world of EV and are contemplating updating their car. I suppose if you've bought an EV in the last 5 years, has there been much of a development in terms of the technology, in terms of battery life, that would warrant an upgrade or a trade-in at this stage?
Not really. There's been an extension of range for sure in the last couple of years, but a new vehicle that came out in October of 2021, which would be a normal PCP finance kind of length of time, which would have been the Volkswagen ID.4. Yes, there's been a small, maybe 5% increase in battery, but overall the bones, the guts, the size of it is pretty similar. So yes, you're getting a small bit more range, but nothing that's life-changing. And what we're seeing now is more and more people are thinking about going used as their next vehicle, or as you're saying, they've come to the end of term and they want to go and see what's okay, what shape and size do I need? Their circumstances may have changed as well, Jess, where they have more kids or less kids because they've gone off to college, so they don't need all the space. And so lots of things change in your life as to what size, shape and car vehicle you'd want. But we're going to have all of that at the show. What we also going to have is talks as to about buying used, thinking about battery health, thinking about depreciation. How would I get over depreciation? Because somebody who bought a vehicle 2-3 years ago may have paid a premium for it because it was at the peak of demand with lack of supply in the marketplace, whereas now manufacturers have had to lower their prices to get more mass market into it. The early adopters are happy to pay a bit of a premium. And so we have all those topics covered in our stages. And so if you're thinking about coming along and upgrading the current electric vehicle that you have, or adding a used electric vehicle to your household as its primary vehicle or a secondary vehicle, we should have everybody there on the day that you need to talk to about what I need to do, what I need to look out for when buying a new or a used EV.
Something that we've spoken about quite a bit on the show in recent times is the use of EVs in commercial fleets. So whether that is, you know, two people working for an SMB who, you know, travel the country on sales trips or whatever it might be, right up to big fleets like, you know, whether it's on Post or whatever, is that something that's going to be catered to as well?
Yeah, we're going to have to focus on that in the morning time. So our first 4 or 5 sessions on both stages are very much about electrifying your fleet, the economics of going electric for your business, smart energy and sustainable for your business as well. And so those kind of topics are what we're going to be covering in the morning time. So if you are thinking about electrifying your fleet, pop along to the Nevo Electric Vehicle Show in the morning time. Now, there still will be cars on display, et cetera, et cetera. But the focus of the sessions and the stages will be a more business commercial, thinking about going electric. What do I need to understand? And we're going to have panels. We're going to have use cases. We're going to have people who have done it already so that you don't have to go and reinvent the wheel.
And in terms of those vehicles, and I know this is probably a broad question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you are the salesperson, or if you have a team of salespeople who do travel the country, Is an EV a viable option? You know, surely it's the same as an individual buying an EV that travels the country. You just need to do the bit of planning and the bit of legwork.
Exactly. But sometimes you do have people on the road that may be going from Cork to Dublin to Athlone and back down to Cork, which wouldn't be the normal commute for a standard person on a daily basis. But there are business owners out there and there are people who work for companies that need to do a lot of mileage during the day. And so we always like to say the telematics and understanding the data. We work with a company called Geotab, where we put a device in the vehicle and it actually will track everything for a couple of months to see, okay, Jess, yes, it is viable for you to go electric. We can see that you never do any more than 250 kilometers. So we're going to give you an electric van or an electric car that has a 400 kilometer range. You're well able. It's within the margin of error. Within, there's going to be a comfort buffer for you there. Same with a van, whatever it may be. So there's lots of different form factors, again, with electric vehicles, be that small cars all the way up to luxury SUVs, same in electric vans. There's small vans all the way up to very large ones, even electric trucks. I was at an event recently and there was an electric cement mixer at it, but that cement mixer is currently working its way around Dublin city centre, ideal for those type of environments. So we want to make sure that you're getting into something that's business viable. Very important that a business doesn't have to stop and charge. It's going to be out of the not doing what it should be doing and making money rather than stopping at a charger. On the flip side, Jess, all these drivers need to stop and have lunch. They might be in meetings. And so they might be, that be the ideal time where those electric vehicles could be charging while they're doing something else, that they're not having to stop and charge.
Yeah. The other point around charging is, you know, businesses, we know that a lot of hotels, for example, are now installing chargers. Will there be guides and talks for businesses who want to look at, you know, having EV chargers on site to explain not only like how to do it and the cost of it, but also the business case for it too?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're going to have panels, but we're also going to have exhibitors that are going there that will specialize and help you understand when you get a CPO, a charge point operator, how they'd work with you on site, whether you're a hotel or a cinema or a restaurant or a tourist attraction. You might think, God, you know, we're getting more and more EVs and more people are asking about us putting in chargers. How are we going to manage that? Some people put in the charger themselves and operate the back office system. Some people say, Derek, look after all of that for me because I've no interest in it. And so picking the right charge point operator for your use case is very important, and understanding the flexibility within that, putting in the right hardware. Do I have different prices for different days of the week to incentivize people who are coming along to charge their vehicle at that time? Or whereas at the weekend, I know I'm going to be busy anyway, so I can charge a premium for that. So there's lots of that type of dynamic pricing conversations, but future proofing it. So if I put in five chargers today, I know that I can add another five chargers to them in 6 months' time. Absolutely. We're going to have talks, but we're also going to have experts there exhibiting on the day at the EV show.
Is there much maintenance required for businesses that have EV chargers on site?
No, really, it's a socket on the wall with a couple of safety devices installed into it. So it's literally, there's no moving parts. There might be a flap on the outside of it to stop the rain getting into it. But normally it's just literally a smart socket on the wall is what it is. It's not even called a charger. Technically, it's EV supply equipment and EVSE. The charger technically is in the vehicle. All this does is it makes sure it gets the right voltage and amperage and it doesn't overload with the circuit of the building. And so the maintenance of these, but there are still good chargers out there and not so good chargers out there. So picking the right company that will install a quality charger is very important, because as we both know, the cheapest product isn't always the best product. You want to understand why something might be a bit more expensive. It might be an ISO standard. It might be more compatible for a coastal area. It might be the fact that you've got tap and pay on it. There's lots of functionalities out there that you need to be aware of. So there's some really good exhibitors at the show that will talk you through that process.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So just remind people when it's on, where it's on, and how they can get tickets.
November the 10th in Dublin, Simmons Court RDS, and it is free to attend. We are still able to take more ticket sales, but we did sell out in February, so don't leave it to the last minute if you're thinking about coming along. And you just head over to nevo.ie, and there's a link there to book your tickets, and families are welcome. I get emails wondering if it's okay to bring kids along. Absolutely. Now, there are parking on site, but it is 900 spaces. And if we're expecting between 20 and 25, we'd recommend thinking about using public transport, maybe using a park and ride and getting in somewhere closer to the city like that. So don't be thinking or reliant on getting parking outside the door. But there is a phenomenal public transport system around, and it is a Sunday, so traffic shouldn't be too bad either.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, we will remind you closer to the time get thinking about your questions. If you are already an EV owner, it's worth going down for a snoop for some of the cars that Derek mentioned. But also, if you're going to get started or contemplating getting started on your EV journey, think about your questions. Have a list, whether it's a piece of paper or on your phone. Go along, ask as many questions as you can on the day. And she might even get to meet the famous Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. Derek, we will hopefully talk to you again before the show. But for now, thank you so much.
Thanks a million, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. If you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. We'll get to some of your emails and questions in just a quick second. But first, John Fardy has graced us with his presence this week. Wowee. John, what's coming up on screen time?
Here I am in the building, corporeal form, squeaking in my chair.
I wish he wasn't here this week. Go on, what's on the show?
So there's a great series on Netflix called The Diplomat, which returns for its second season next week. And I'm talking to the great Kerry Russell and Rufus Swale, stars of that show. You know Kerry Russell, of course, from things like The Americans and some of the other cast members. And as always, we'll have the reviews of the week's new TV shows and indeed films for your viewing pleasure.
Films. I was listening to Off the Ball Breakfast on Thursday morning, I want to say, and they were talking about a new baseball series that's on Netflix, and they had a bit of a discussion around, I suppose, the caliber of sports documentaries. Mm-hmm. And do you need to be interested in the sport to enjoy and appreciate a sports documentary? We've spoken about the things like Senna before, which are just masterful.
Yeah.
But things like the Wrexham documentary on Disney Plus, there's been some pretty good ones. ESPN's 30 for 30.
The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan one.
I didn't love that, but I think that's because I watched it during the pandemic and it was a bit meh.
I thought it was great. Senna, as you say, the Maradona one by Asif Kapadia. A great sports documentary. You have to have no interest in sport is my take on it. That's what makes them great. Like a great sports book, Andre Agassi's autobiography, Open. I'm a mild interest in tennis, but it's one of the best books I've ever read, let alone sporting, as a man who was kind of messed up by tennis and made friends with it. So I think a great sporting documentary, a great music documentary, you should not need to have any interest in the sport or the music to make it great. That said, for me, baseball, it'd have to be a damn good documentary. Yeah. I've been to America plenty of times. I did a J1 there for various things and work. I've gone to baseball games plenty of times and I just can never, as a person who enjoys sports and watching sports, I have never enjoyed a baseball game other than talking and drinking, but the actual sport, it just doesn't do it for me. So a baseball documentary, it'll have to be damn good.
Yeah, the lads were saying that. Jer was kind of saying he'd have no real interest, but Cullum and Arthur, who he was talking to, had said that it was quite interesting so far. But Arthur made a really good point that he didn't watch the David Beckham one, the David Beckham documentary, because he sometimes take issue with the fact that he's lived through that period and he would have known an awful lot that goes on. And a documentary series like that's never going to have the time or the space to represent things fully. They kind of pick and choose. And obviously there's an editorial direction of these documentaries as well. So are they kind of vanity projects or is it just a form of entertainment?
Well, you see, the problem with, you take the David Beckham one, there's two ways of looking at it. So he was front and center of that, producer, whatever. So it's very sanitized. The flip side of that is you do a documentary where he's not involved and you get all this secondhand stuff. So it's trying to find the right balance between that. Incidentally, what just popped into my head, a strange dovetailing of events with baseball, and you're going to go, oh no, he's mentioning Billy Joel again.
I knew there'd be a Billy Joel connection.
There is a brilliant documentary about Billy Joel and the New York Mets called The Last Play at Shea.
Okay.
And it's all about Billy Joel closing Shea Stadium where the Mets played. And it charts in tandem the history of the Mets and the history of Billy Joel. So when I said it would have to be a very good baseball documentary, the history of the Mets is fascinating because they were a poor man or woman's team for a long time. And I think still are to a large extent. Well, that's a great documentary because the Mets, the Brooklyn Dodgers left New York and went out to California the same week Billy Joel's father left and went to Vienna. And it traces those parallel stories about the Mets growing and coming to life in New York. So there you go.
Well, there's a nice Billy Joel story for us all. So, Screen Time with John is coming up in just a few minutes at 6 o'clock. I mentioned Off the Wall Breakfast. You can watch it every morning. It's live and free on YouTube, or you can, of course, become a subscriber on the Off the Ball app now. John, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Right, before we get to your questions, I just want to talk briefly about the €310 million fine that was issued by the Data Protection Commission against LinkedIn. So this inquiry was launched by the DPC following a complaint initially made to the French Data Protection Authority. So this particular inquiry looked at LinkedIn's processing of personal data for the purposes of behavioural analysis and targeting targeted advertising of users who created LinkedIn profiles. It is an interesting one. It's another instance of GDPR having our back. I know that the Deputy Commissioner at DPC, Graham Doyle, said the lawfulness of processing is a fundamental aspect of data protection law, and the processing of personal data without an appropriate legal basis is a clear and serious violation of a data subject's fundamental right to data protection. So, as I said, €310 million of a fine heading the way of LinkedIn. These fines are significant. I know some people roll their eyes saying that, you know, millions isn't enough when you're dealing with companies that operate in terms of billions. But it is good to see investigations and inquiries being launched, outcomes being determined, and then fines being issued. And hopefully corrective measures are put in place. And so we see less and less of this as time goes on. But although this wasn't a great day for LinkedIn, I have to say, personally speaking, I'm very much enjoying LinkedIn at the moment. It's maybe it's a sign of my middle age, but it is fast becoming one of my most used social platforms. Some of it's a bit cringe in terms of people using AI to write how awesome they are at their awesome job and everything is awesome. You can always tell an AI post a million miles away, in my humble opinion. But in terms of connecting with people and getting insights into what goes on in different sectors, different careers and all the rest, I have to say, I absolutely love it. But let me know what you think. Were you surprised by this fine? Do you pay attention to these fines? Is this something that's just a me thing? I'd love to know what you think. TechTalk@newstalk.com. Right, let us go to the inbox and see what questions you have for me. Sophie has been in touch and she says, "Hi Jess, I was listening to you talking on the hard shoulder on Wednesday. You mentioned a standing desk. Can you please let me know what one you have and if you would recommend?" Yes, Sophie, we have a standing desk at home. So I actually wrote about this for the Business Post not that long ago. When we moved into our house, one of the first things we decided upon was the allocation of the box room to become a home office. My boyfriend works from home. It was really important to us, having lived in an apartment for 10 years, having worked from the dining room table of that apartment for 3 or 4 years, we were adamant that we wanted a home office. Again, we were very lucky and privileged to be in the position to have that decision. But we wanted to make sure that we had good equipment in it. When the pandemic hit, we worked from the dining table, as I said, in the apartment, and we sat on kitchen chairs, which were not good for our posture or for our spines. I have the exact things that we have. We have the Codex Bamboo Leap Desk. This is a large desk. It looks beautiful. There's only two legs either side, it has a remote control, so you can have it so you can sit down at it, you can elevate it depending on who's sitting at it, or you can also elevate it entirely so you can stand at it. And it is non-disruptive. It's not going to knock your stuff off. It is a very smooth progression from the seated position to the standing position. So that's the Codex Bamboo Leap Desk. And then we also got an ergonomic office chair, which again sounds very middle-aged, but we are where we are. The difference it has made to have a proper ergonomic chair is incredible. We did, myself and my former colleague Gavin McLaughlin, did a show during the pandemic called Future of Work, and we spoke to an expert who explained how and why your working environment impacts your health. And things like standing up during the workday, getting up, moving around the office, having a comfortable chair that aligns with your spine, all of those things are super important. So it is definitely worth investing in. And again, we got the chair from Codex. So they're an Irish company. If you want to have a gawk, you will find them there. Next, we have an email from Grace. And Grace says, "Hi, Jess, I'm an Apple Watch user, but the battery life has gone kaput. It's about 6 years old. No idea what model it is. Need a new one. Do I go SE or 9? Any help? Much appreciated." So, Grace, I am a huge advocate and fan of the Apple Watch. I don't know what model you have. If it's that old, it served you well. It depends on what you want the watch to do for you. If you want it to just track your steps and your sleep, you probably don't need the Watch 9. If, however, you want certain health features like the ECG, if you want the bigger screen, or indeed the bigger battery life, then it could be worth going for the Watch 9. Personally speaking, if I was buying one today, I would go with the Watch SE, purely because I don't need or want those extra notions, bells and whistles. So that's essentially the key difference between the two. One has more sophisticated health monitor technology built in, and the other is still an excellent fitness tracker and productivity tool. It just doesn't have ECG. So I do hope that helps. If you have any questions for me, please do drop them in. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. I think that's it. Yeah, that is it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Anton Savage on the Pat Kenny Show on Tuesday morning. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.
Every year, thousands of students go on their first holiday abroad. Our 5G roaming in 80 countries means they're connected as soon as they land.
Just a reminder to wear sunscreen, love, because you're as pale as a ghost. Oh, and can you send me all your friends' numbers, because their mothers are on to me. And always keep your cash in your bum bag, yeah?
Every connection counts, which is why Ireland can count on our network. Vodafone. Together we can.
Subject to coverage availability. Limitations and terms apply. See vodafone.ie/terms.